Power Records presents...
Hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Power Records podcast, where the action comes alive. I'm your normal host, Rob Kelly, and with me is my normal co-host, Chris Franklin of Supermates Podcast. Chris, how you doing?
I'm pretty good. I'm usually not called normal, though. So.
Oh, is that what I said? Oh, I said normal, yeah. I get so nervous when I'm hosting these things. We're back for another selection of Power Records audio goodness, but first... let us thank our sponsor, InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades is your best online source for trades, hardcovers, and other collected editions, all for up to 45% off with free shipping for orders of $50 or more. Chris, what is your selection this time around?
Well, since, of course, it's Power Records, chances are it's got a cover by Neil Adams, and this one does. So I picked the DC Universe Illustrated by Neil Adams Volume 1 hardcover. The description on InStock Trades reads, "At last, it's here, the first of three hardcover volumes collecting nearly every DC comic story and cover by Neil Adams not already collected in Green Lantern, Green Arrow, Batman, or Deadman titles. Featuring rarely seen stories from Our Army at War 182, 183, and 186, Star Spangled War Stories 134 and 134 and 144, Detective Comics, Teen Titans, Action Comics, Superman, Weird War Tales, and more." The price, normal retail price, is $39.99. InStock trade price is $21.99. That is a savings of 45%.
That sounds like a good deal. That sounds like a neat book, too. I like the idea of like picking an artist or writer and collecting all their stuff under two covers, between two covers. That's a neat thing.
Right. Now, the cover's got the Teen Titans. It's from that story he did with the... it's got the giant spider creature robot thing, and he did that crazy dimension-hopping Teen Titans story that had Hawk and Dove in it, and he's got a new cover based on that. So it's pretty sharp-looking.
Cool. My selection, because we are talking about two Batman audio adventures, one of which where he sort of meets Sherlock Holmes... I picked Sherlock Holmes' Greatest Cases Hardcover Volume 1, which is from IDW. This is collecting many of the great Sherlock Holmes' most notable cases. The Best of Sherlock Holmes is an oversized, you know I love that, volume for the Sherlock fan in your life, including tales such as The Glorious Scott, The Adventure of the Speckled Band, The Resident Patient, A Study in Scarlet, The Adventures of the Noble Bachelor, and many more. So what this is it's a prose book. It's all the original stories by Arthur Conan Doyle with spot illustrations by Kelly Jones and a cover by Kelly Jones. And it's a really, you can just see from the cover, it's a really handsome-looking book. And I think this is like a perfect thing for someone who isn't necessarily a comics fan but is a Sherlock Holmes fan. And this might kind of get them into both worlds because Kelly Jones is a superb artist. Page count is 188. The normal price is $39.99. InStock Trades price is $19.99. That is 50% off. So, Wow. Yeah, that's a good deal. So, check out both of these books. And for these and all your other trade paperwork needs, visit InStockTrades.com. And we thank them for their support. All right. As we said this time around, we are going to talk about Batman. We have yet to cover him on the Power Records podcast, unbelievably, even though he was one of Power Records' biggest stars. He's pretty much anybody's biggest star when you think about it. Mego or cartoons, you know, Batman's right. Always going to be one of your biggest stars. So the record in question that we're talking about is, it's untitled, as all these Power Records ones are untitled. It was a book and record set, an LP, and there are two stories, Gorilla City and The Mystery of the Scarecrow Corpse. The cover is by Neil Adams, as Chris alluded to, and we see Batman facing off against Grodd and... not facing off against Sherlock Holmes, although it sort of looks like that here. Like I said, this was released as an LP featuring a book and record set. There's some amazing stuff. We'll get into all that after the audio adventures proper. So why don't you everybody sit back and enjoy these two stories, Gorilla City and The Mystery of the Scarecrow Corpse.
A sleek ebony aircraft wings its way eastward over the waters of the Atlantic. The pilot is the world's greatest detective. The craft is the Batplane. And the destination is the heart of darkest Africa.
But
Batman here, recording entry number 21A from my mission logbook. I am currently cruising at 1,243 miles per hour at an altitude of 57,000 feet. My estimated time of arrival over Africa's Kabanzi jungle will be approximately 25 minutes from now. As for the purpose of this flight to the largely unexplored Kabanzi Highlands, it all began only a few days ago, when Commissioner Gordon asked a favor of me in his office. John and Mary Tate, aren't they the man and wife team who won a Nobel Prize last year for their experiments with suspended animation?
The same, Batman. And the fact that they'll be visiting Gotham City has been splashed all over the media. That's why I'd be grateful if you acted as the Tate's bodyguard while they're here.
You're worried about possible action from enemy agents?
Let's just say there are several unfriendly foreign powers who would have no qualms about kidnapping the Tates to obtain their vital scientific research. I'd feel a lot better if I knew you'd never be far from their side.
Consider it done, Commissioner. Gordon was a cautious man, and he was right. Every major power on Earth has been trying to crack the secret of suspended animation for years, and the Tate's award-winning work in time suspension biology seemed to put them closer to perfecting the process than anyone else. All these thoughts ran through my mind as I met the famous couple that afternoon at Gotham Airport.
Batman, this is indeed an honor. No one told Mary and me to expect such an esteemed figure to offer himself as our guide to Gotham City.
John and I have been in awe of you for years, Batman.
That is one feeling, Mrs. Tate, I assure you, is mutual. I consider it a privilege to be of service. I arranged to have the best suite at the Gotham Hilton awaiting the Tates, and I made sure I was in the next room. After a busy night of dinners and functions, the Tates retired to their suite for a well-earned night's sleep. I, on the other hand, remained on guard in my room next door, using transcendental meditation to ease my mind into a relaxed level of consciousness. Relaxed, but ever alert. Much of the night drifted by peacefully, and then I heard it. My TM trance was suddenly interrupted by the sound of a breaking window. The split second I rushed into their suite, I was attacked by what I never had a chance to see. It was so dark. I struggled furiously, but it was already too late. My mystery attacker had me from behind, in the crushing grip of a bear hug not even a grizzly could have matched. Within scant seconds, the vice-like grip had the best of me. I passed out. The next day, I couldn't turn on a TV or radio or even pick up a paper without hearing the same story.
And we here at WKGC can't help wondering if Batman's failure to rescue John and Mary Tate last night is a sign that it may finally be time for the cowled crusader to hang up his cowl. After all, the famous Nobel Prize-winning team is now missing, and many people hold Batman responsible.
But I was too busy to indulge bad publicity, as my faithful butler Alfred helped me conduct a series of exhaustive scientific tests in the crime lab of the Batcave.
I think we have it, sir. I believe this last battery of tests has narrowed down the classification of the pollen traces you scraped from your uniform after your skirmish last night.
You're right, Albert. I'm cross-checking the geographic tables now. Here we are. The pollen is Retulus parina, and it is only distributed by plants in the Kabanzi jungle in Africa. That means whoever kidnapped the Tates last night came from that jungle.
Most intriguing. I'll fuel the Batplane for takeoff, sir. Sir?
Yes, Alfred?
About those unexplained traces of fur you found at the Tate's suite, have you reached any conclusions?
None, Alfred. At least none that makes any kind of sense yet. Moments later, I was winging my way eastward, leaving the Batcave and Gotham City behind, with one slim clue to go on and no idea what lay waiting for me in Africa. And speaking of Africa, I see the Kabanzi jungle is coming up directly ahead. It's time for me to wrap up this report.
But before the Caped Crusader can end his log entry and switch off the tape...
Trouble! One of my turbojets has backfired. The Batplane is nosediving out of control. Mayday! Mayday! Controls won't respond properly. A crash landing imminent. Doing my best to avoid.
Finally, the smoldering and crippled Batplane comes to rest, leaving a torn and tattered figure slumped in the cockpit. A cowled figure that does not move or utter a sound.
For many hours, the scene remains unchanged as life in the jungle proceeds in primitive ignorance of the damaged aircraft and its unmoving passenger. And then, as sunset filters through the tropical trees, a pair of rescuers appears, gently removing the limp, unconscious crime fighter from the shattered cockpit.
Did he sustain any permanent damage, do you think?
Yeah, I would say negative. A mild concussion, several bruises and lacerations. His injuries do not seem to extend beyond that. Once we get him into the city, our healing facility should completely restore his health.
Right. To the city, then.
The two rescuers lumber away, effortlessly carrying the 180-pound Batman between them. Effortlessly, because these rescuers are both gorillas. Hours pass. The Caped Crusader groggily moans and stirs. But it is not tropical vegetation and African wilds he opens his eyes to see. Instead, it is the antiseptic confines of an incredibly well-equipped, highly advanced laboratory.
Where am I? Have you ever heard of Gorilla City, Batman?
You're a prisoner here now, just like John and me.
Great Scott! John and Mary Tate! Imagine a super-advanced city in the heart of darkest Africa, built and inhabited by apes, far more intelligent than man himself. A city that is even invisible to the human eye, surrounded by a special force field only its gorilla inhabitants can see.
John and I had heard the legends like everyone else, but we never dreamed they were all true.
Batman always knew they were true, didn't you, Batman?
All eyes turn toward the source of that chilling, compelling voice of pure evil. The voice of Grodd, the most powerful and formidable of all the apes. Grodd, the super gorilla.
Tell them, Batman. Tell the Tates how cleverly you worked your way in here.
Why don't you explain it, Grodd?
And I shall. A Batman, you see, no doubt used that renowned detective skill of his to pinpoint some clue my gorilla agent must have left behind at the scene of your abduction, Mr. and Mrs. Tate. A clue that he could trace here to the Kabanzi jungle. Being as unusually well-informed as he is, Batman knew Gorilla City was purported to be in Kabanzi, although no human being had ever seen it. So what did Batman do? He deliberately crashed his plane and knocked himself out, figuring he'd be brought into Gorilla City as a prisoner.
Batman, we appreciate all the trouble you went to. You must understand, the experiments we've been conducting here are against our will.
Grodd has also kidnapped our daughter, and has threatened her safety if we don't do exactly as he says.
That sounds like your style, Grodd. Just what is it about the Tate suspended animation work you find so fascinating?
You're about to find out for yourself, Batman.
Even before he can make a move to defend himself, Batman is seized by two gorilla guards and placed inside a plexiglass booth hooked up to an ominous pulsating machine. A machine monitored by John and Mary Tate.
You see this little gadget I hold in my hand, Batman? It's the remote control device that regulates the rather large apparatus next to you. The Tates call it a biological brake. What it does is slow down a person's metabolism and body functions to an absolute minimum to prepare him for suspended animation. It would even work on gorillas if the setting were correct. But today, you are our guinea pig, Batman. Shall we begin?
Grodd presses the remote control device. The biological brake is activated, and a bolt of shimmering energy seems to flash through Batman's body. A moment later, the plexiglass booth is raised, and its prisoner staggers out.
Something wrong, Batman? You look a bit under the weather. Why don't you say something? Anything?
What's happening to me?
Very simple, Batman. You have become a living example of slow motion. You now walk, talk, react, even think 10 times slower than a normal man. The world's greatest detective has been rendered totally useless. Now let's see how good you are at defending yourself.
Don't do that.
Stop it, Grodd. You're tossing him around like he was a rag doll.
Please stop. You'll kill him.
Hardly. Batman does not deserve such an easy death. I am through toying with him for now. What I have in mind for his demise will be far more excruciating.
At once, John and Mary rush to the fallen Cape Crusader's side, only to discover...
Oh, no! It can't be! Oh!
He's dead, Grodd. I hope you're satisfied now.
Get away from there! Does Batman think he can fool me as easily as a human?
The grieving Tates back away as an angry Grodd kneels beside Batman's limp body, placing the remote control device on the floor of the booth.
It's a trick! Batman should have recovered by now. The slowdown effect is temporary.
Grodd places his massive head over Batman's chest, listening for a heartbeat that isn't there. But he doesn't notice Batman's hand moving slowly toward the remote control device. His fingers find the activator button. They push it. And Grodd is immersed in a bolt of shimmery energy this time, while the masked manhunter unexpectedly springs to his feet in time to avoid the pulsating beam.
Batman, you're alive!
I knew he couldn't be dead. I just knew it.
And now, Grodd, let's see how you like a dose of your own slow medicine. It's not so easy, Batman.
Oh, my gosh! Grodd has grabbed Batman!
Surprise, Batman! You forget, I'm a super gorilla. The biological break takes a lot longer to affect me. Long enough for me to crush the life out of you first.
Desperately, every muscle in his superbly conditioned body being ripped apart in tortured agony, Batman tries to pry himself loose from the bone-crushing grip of the killer gorilla.
That's it, Batman. Keep fighting it. The more you resist, the tighter my grip becomes. Until I finish squeezing the very life out of you.
Finally, the biological break finally took effect. Grodd's not even moving.
But neither is Batman, is he?
And then a weak but reassuring voice puts the Tate's fears to rest.
I'll be all right. As soon as I slip through Grodd's arms, his reactions are too slow to stop me now.
And as an exhausted but breathing Batman extricates himself from what almost became a horrible crushing death.
How in the world did you fool Grodd, Batman, when he listened for your heartbeat?
He couldn't hear it, because I was practicing an extremely difficult form of yoga that allowed a full minute between heartbeats.
Incredible.
But what do we do now, Batman? Grodd's gorilla henchmen are all around us.
They're harmless without their leader. It was brainwaves from Grodd's super mind that was dominating the other apes, forcing them to obey his commands. Normally, the citizens of Gorilla City are among the friendliest on Earth, but you'll soon see that for yourselves.
And true to Batman's words, the super advanced gorillas show John and Mary Tate nothing but the finest VIP treatment.
Thank you for returning our daughter to us so promptly, Solovar.
Yes, you and the other gorillas have truly been splendid hosts these past few days.
It's the least we could do, Mr. Tate, after what Grodd put your family through. But now that he's in our maximum security pen, Grodd won't be menacing the human race for many years to come. There you are, Batman. Does the jet craft we furnished meet your approval?
Indeed it does, Solovar. And it's fueled and ready to go. Your daughter is already on board waiting to take off, Mr. Tate.
Very well, then. It's time to say our farewells.
Moments later, a gorilla jetcraft soars into the jungle sky as Batman pilots the Tate family home, leaving the invisible Gorilla City behind them once again, hidden forever in the wilds of darkest Africa. We are at the Sussex campus of Oxford University in England, where the Batman is addressing a group of British criminologists. We join the lecture already in progress.
Along with a sound education and basic chemical analysis. One never knows when a clue in the form of a soil sample or a cloth stain is staring the unwary detective in the face. I'm most impressed in the growth I've seen in this area, this side of the Atlantic. I am therefore most honored to be here.
Yes, Mr. Pico, what is it?
There's a call for you, Batman. It came during your talk from a gentleman at Scotland Yard.
Make my excuses, Mr. Pico. This sounds important.
Ladies and gentlemen, our distinguished guest from the United States will take no questions this afternoon. He has just been called upon to...
This is the Batman speaking.
Oh, my, yes, Batman. I say, this is Inspector Oswald of Scotland Yard. seem to have happened upon a rather grisly incident, and I thought, since you were in such proximity...
You have my help. The story, please, Inspector.
Yes, quite. Well, it seems that several villagers in Cadbury reported a shining object fell into the moors 5 days ago. We assumed it was a shooting star or some such, but we sent an investigator there anyhow. Higgins was the chap's name.
And he found?
Higgins? Well, we don't know what he found. We found Higgins. Dead, actually. Propped on a wooden stand and dressed like a scarecrow. A routine case, it was.
Nothing routine about murder, Inspector.
Yes, quite. Anyhow, we dispatched another investigator there this morning. If you could join him...
Thanks, Inspector, but I work alone. I'll get over there myself.
Hello? The blighter seems to have disengaged the line. Hello?
I'm certainly not going to be there for a long time.
Oh, I and I don't even think you're going for longer.
Who be you, stranger? You're dressed as you're looking for work about the fields, but Cadbury's is sure in a way the wrong village for you to be looking in these times.
I'm not looking for work, but I may be looking to join you in a game of darts.
You won't be wanting to put any money on the game, would you, mate?
Good foul, Billy.
Nobody in these parts can beat me on the board. Have a brew on me.
I don't drink or take chances. Tell me, mate, have you been out in the moors lately?
The moors?
First time you missed the bulls on for trolls, Billy.
Not a body I know been out there since that Higgins broke.
Ow, fine shot, Billy.
Those demons from space there for sure. That's what folks round here all say.
You scored 200 on that round, Billy boy.
Thanks for the company. I think I'll take a walk.
Old friend, are you going to throw your darts?
The darts? Oh, yes, just a...
One at a time, mate. Don't throw them all at...
I'm in kind of a rush.
Six bullseyes in one throw. I've never seen such a shot like that in all the day.
Where you was that man? And where the deuce did he go?
The disguised Batman has slipped outside the pub, where he is startled by a rich, dark voice.
The eminent Batman, I presume.
Who? How on earth did you sneak up behind... Well, at least do me the courtesy of allowing me to remove my disguise before you recognize me.
A thousand pardons, good Batman. Of course, you realize that to a trained eye, the coordination of a superbly trained athlete is evident no matter how you disguise your walk. And your skin tone is much too deep for a native of overcast England this time of year.
Obviously. And you, of course, are...
Inspector Derek Holmes at your service.
Derek Holmes? Not a relation of the legendary detective Sherlock Holmes, are you?
That would be too much to hope for, dear Batman. But don't think I avoid a good deal of ribbing for my name. Here's a secluded spot for you to remove your disguise, if you like.
The masked manhunter and his new companion fade into the mists of the swamp as night signals its coming.
Now, Inspector Holmes, I have a case to solve, so...
Nonsense, Batman. We have been thrown together with regard to this matter. We would obviously profit by working as a team.
Holmes, look out, that wagon!
An impressive crash, would you not say?
Effective, most effective. We caught them against impenetrable undergrowth. They could in no way have escaped contact with the wagon.
We should leave before they are discovered.
That was a close one.
Our presence seems to have made someone nervous. Did you get a good look at them, Holmes?
Decidedly, Batman. Their accents betray their point of national origin, among other things. But whatever was that delightful capsule that saved us both?
This one? It's an airbag. The type used as an instant cushion in crashing planes and cars. Inflates on impact.
Perhaps I should get a utility belt of my own. I assume you noticed the boots on our two friends.
Yes, a certain kind of shale on their shoes with a texture I don't see on the ground around here.
It's a green clay, actually, called lime rock. The nearest point it can be found is in the area where the unidentified object was sighted.
Interesting. Shall we be off?
Night on the moors in a fog-shrouded glen provides adequate cover for two men combing the swamps for a valuable piece of equipment.
If you rake through this mud and muck 1 foot at a time, it may as well be a continent.
Yeah, patience. As long as the villagers fear to come here, we are the only ones likely to find...
What was that? Something metallic.
Yes. Help me unearth this. Another rock. Yes, it's the payload from our crashed satellite.
We have found it! Eureka!
Hold! Quiet! Who is that coming?
Only me. I found this one snooping in the area.
The British inspector. The one we thought we eliminated. No matter, for we shall soon be back in the motherland with our prize.
Where is your friend, dog? The one with the costume.
Dead, poor devil. He sheltered me from the crash. I see you have succeeded in your scheme.
Scheme? How could you know of any scheme?
Elementary, my dear abductors. The UFO reports of a week ago were the result of one of your country's satellites malfunctioning and crashing into this bog. A surveillance satellite, no doubt, with aerial photographs of the military installations of the North Atlantic countries. When poor Inspector Higgins stumbled across you several days ago, you constructed that bizarre scarecrow murder to horrify the townspeople and discourage any further interference while you sought out your lost equipment.
Observant, my friend. But have you also determined there is a glimmer of a chance you might avoid being propped up in a scarecrow outfit yourself?
If you would permit me a moment to light my pipe, it might become clearer to you.
Look, when he lit his match, I saw it. The shadow.
What is wrong with you? What did you see?
The scarecrow. The policeman we put into scarecrow clothes. He's come back.
Where? A gunshot in its direction will quiet your...
Quite bad manners, my good man. Aiming a gun for the guest.
Where did you kick my gun? I'll get you for it.
You'll get no one. Ever again.
The scarecrow!
Not quite a scarecrow, swine. But if it's fear you crave, then someday think back to this moor when you took the life of a law officer for some petty national interest you thought more important than a life. And you'll remember a Batman striking with a vengeance into the souls of petty criminals and international outlaws alike. That's when you'll know that today you looked into the face of fear.
The darkness falls away to morning as a lone masked manhunter, the world's greatest detective, delivers three agents of a foreign power to Scotland Yard.
It was a remarkable showing you made, Batman. You deserve your reputation. I'm only sorry you had to go it alone on that moor.
You mean bringing them in? I wondered where Holmes disappeared to, but I assumed he could take care of himself after the hard work was over.
Holmes? I don't know whatever you could be talking about, old chap. My investigator had a car accident on the way to Cadbury. Nothing serious. The hospital should release him any day. Now, what about this Holmes fellow who disappeared?
Holmes? Inspector Derek Holmes. Don't play games, Oswald. Frankly, I didn't believe that was his name, but...
Oh, you daft man. I tell you, I sent no one. Oh, I get it. It's this odd American sense of humor I've never quite understood.
Sense of humor?
Yes, Holmes indeed. World's greatest detective and all. I suppose if I were the ghost of Sherlock Holmes, I would want to crack at working with my only living equal.
Ghost of Sherlock Holmes?
Oh, you Americans. Quite a sense of humor. I must be getting on. Cheerio, old chap.
And those were Gorilla City and the Mystery of the Scarecrow Corpse. Two very, very fun adventures. Chris, did you have this record growing up as a kid? I did.
Well, I didn't have this version. I had those two stories on that Batman LP that was just audio only, but it had these two and Robin Meets Man-Bat and Catwoman's Revenge on it.
Okay, Robin Meets Man-Bat. That's like the best one they ever did.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, of course, that was on my first Power Records appearance before it was its own show. So that's my favorite all-time one. But I really enjoyed these two, and because they were on the same record, I listened to them over and over and over again. So it was years later before I knew they ever made a comic, read-along version. And I love it. It's great. Well, I found it on the Power Records blogs where I first saw it, and I actually did find one in the wild one time, but they had some crazy price tag on it, and it had, you know, some kind of big stain on it. So I'm like, nah, I think I'll skip that. But one of these days I need to get a hold of a copy of it.
Both these stories were drawn by Jose Luis Garcia Lopez.
Praise be his name.
Which is amazing. You know, I mean, a Neil Adams cover and JLGL on the insides, can't beat that. And both stories were written by Cary Bates and Elliot S. Maggot. So this is, like, the most sort of, you know, direct DC comic book turned into a record. I mean, you know, you really could repurpose these as issues of Batman and nobody would know the difference.
Right. I mean, they've got a very legit Bronze Age Batman feel to them. I mean, you could see them slipping them into a Detective Comics or a Batman around that time. I mean, no problem.
Yeah, and you mentioned about, like, not having seen these as a comic book before. It's because for some strange reason, neither of these were issued as their own sets. They were repurposed for that LP that you just mentioned, and they were put out here, but they were not put out as 45s with their own, you know, in their own format for some strange reason, which is too bad because it means we were denied some new Neil Adams covers, which, you know, would have been awesome.
Yeah.
You would think that Batman would just, every Batman story would have been reissued as a single. Because it's Batman.
I mean, yeah, it's printing money, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Right. I don't understand. But anyway, the first one said is Gorilla City. And, I mean, it's steeped in DC Comics lore and then the fact that, you know, of just the concept of Gorilla City and Gorilla Grodd and the fact that Batman is already aware of this guy. So these are people that have met before. Now, what did you think of this one?
Well, you know, I enjoyed this one. I always have. And I don't know if I probably knew Grodd from Challenge of the Super Friends. I'm not really sure exactly at what point I got this record. But, you know, I was, you know, growing up, when I remember listening to it, I was aware of Grodd and Gorilla City. And they actually, this was from 76, they actually had a Super Friends episode set in Gorilla City.
That's right.
This came before that. And Cary Bates wrote The Flash for, like, decades. So, you know, he was obviously up on Gorilla City. The one thing that kind of I found strange throughout this story is Batman seems to know of Grodd. It seems like they've met before, but he at times seems to not know about Gorilla City, where it is exactly, but then he seems like he's been there before. You know, it's like, oh, they're great. They're the most welcoming host you'll ever find, you know. It's, but I've never been here. You know, it's,
yeah.
So that part kind of was a little odd, but, you know, one thing that really jumps out at me in both of these stories is even though this feels like a very Bronze Age Batman comic, you have Batman being a very public figure. I mean, he's assigned to guard these scientists. He meets them at an airport where all the press is around them. I mean, this is Adam West still.
Yeah,
this is
deputized Batman, certainly.
Yeah, he's the duly deputized agent of the law, Batman, here. I mean, he looks, you know, very much like the Neil Adams-y, you know, dark Avenger of the Night Batman, but he's, you know, running around in broad daylight, and he's taking on these international cases. And but, you know, I mean, the comics were like that at the time, you know. I mean, it's so there's not as, you know, people that have a real problem with the 60s TV series or, you know, they really need to stop and really look at the comics of the 70s and see, although they did throw out the camp elements and things like that, there's quite a bit still remaining of that feel. So
yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's, and he is, and as we'll get to in the second adventure, it's a similar thing. I mean, it's in fact even more so when we get to the second one. It's funny, that whole bit about, I mean, I had this record as a kid, so I remember it. And, you know, you go back and I listen to it, and it's like, even though they explain what it is, they mentioning transcendental meditation in a kid's record is a pretty heavy concept. You know, like, it's amazing how they just sort of throw it out, where Batman's like, I study transcendental meditation. And then he calls it TM later on. He doesn't, you know, he gives it the abbreviation. I'm like, wow.
Hashtag TM.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. It's like, he's really comfortable. And, you know, for some reason, there's something about that shtick that always worked for me, because that same idea of Batman slowing his heart rate down was used in an issue of World's Finest.
Yes.
Written by Jerry Conway. And it's a one-off story. It's about a guy that knocks Batman out almost accidentally and then buries him alive. And the whole issue is Batman trapped in a coffin trying to and, like, it's one of my favorite Batman stories. So there's something about, I don't know, just Batman being able to master his body like that's always worked for him, because it really works here. I mean, I still, that bit about where Batman has to slow down, and he's, yeah. you know, don't do that. It's so, I still remember it to this day. It feels like I just heard it for the first time, even though it was like 30 years ago.
That's one of those things that's in my head too. That World's Finest comic you were talking about, I always remember that because the cover of it shows all of the heroes that are in World's Finest.
That's right.
You know, they're like, we can't find Batman anywhere. And then it's like a Rich Buckler cover, I believe.
Yep.
You know, you see Batman under the ground in the coffin, like an X-ray almost. He's like beating against the top of the coffin lid.
Yep.
But it's like one of those cheats. It's like Green Arrow, Hawkman, and Red Tornado are not in this story. You know what I'm saying? The crap. And Captain Marvel, I think. But I always liked when Batman did things like that, or when he'd I expanded my muscles when they tied me up. So if I, relax them, I can slip out of the ropes. You know, that type of stuff always is good. One thing that leaped out at me when doing this, and I guess because I have always, had this story in my head, given what Power Records also had the license for, this is Batman on the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. It's 1976. Planet of the Apes is incredibly popular. They've got a TV show. They got a cartoon. They got a toy line for Mego. They got Power Records. They got Marvel magazines. And, I almost guarantee that somebody at Power Records or somewhere at DC pitched, hey, how about we do Batman in Gorilla City? You know, he's one of our most popular characters. We can do a Planet of the Apes type thing because the gorillas are dressed a lot more. They have more clothing on than they ever do in the comics.
Yeah, they've got full-on uniforms and stuff like that.
Yeah, Gorilla City, Solovar has a cape, usually in the comics, but the rest of them are buck naked, So it really feels, especially with the accents of the two gorillas that pick Batman up, one sounds kind of like Roddy McDowell, So I really do think that had an influence on this. It's, two tastes that taste great together,
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a Power Record, a Star Trek one, where this barbarian shows up on the Enterprise and starts wreaking havoc, and he looks just like Conan.
Right.
He looks exactly like Conan. And in fact, if you didn't know better, you're like, when did Conan ever team up with the Star Trek guy? So I think Power Records just thought they could play a little fast and loose with some of their hey, why not? This is, kids will enjoy this. Why not? Clearly, DC Marvel are not paying attention to what we're doing. So what the hell?
Right. It's exactly. Yeah. I like Batman's, the voice actor for Batman on these two, but that's partially because this album is so ingrained in my brain. I really did like his Batman, but I think he may be the same guy that's doing Grodd.
Hmm.
Just with a deeper voice. I do kind of miss the challenge of the Super Friends Grodd, the Stanley Ralph Ross with the
slurping
and the, it's like, we'll see you in the future.
I gotta have you and Shag do an episode together. We're just doing Darkseid and Grodd and Solomon Grundy voices. I would enjoy that. I would enjoy that very much.
But yeah, it's a lot of fun. One thing that kind of gets me is, when I did notes for this, I didn't really think about it, but Batman crashed his jet on purpose and faked and knocked himself out. That's dedication.
He is in for a penny, in for a pound, this guy, he's just gonna do it.
There's no length he won't go to for justice.
That's right.
Sound like the Brave and the Bold just then.
That's right, it is. Yeah. By the way, I looked it up, and the Kabanzi jungle, that's totally made up. That's not There is no Kabanzi jungle.
Well, that's why nobody's found Gorilla City. They don't know where the jungle is.
Exactly. Yeah, Carrie Bates and Elliot Magner are like, I'll just call it the Kabanzi. It's fine. The Kabanzi. We don't need them.
Remember they did that Justice League JLA, JSA crossover where Bates became a villain. And
that's right. That's right.
Magner was like an Earth Prime, all that stuff. That's one of my least favorite, honestly, of all of those. But they worked together quite a bit off and on Superman comics and stuff back then. Of course, they both were writing a lot of Superman at the time. This definitely feels like you could see this maybe if they did like a new Treasury book.
Be still my beating heart.
Yeah, I mean, they could have put these in a Treasury comic, you know, mm-hmm. and because of the format of the pages, and it would have worked really well. So it's a shame that they haven't done something with them. I think DC should really, you know, like we were talking about the Neil Adams type comic, they should reprint all of these Power Records comics.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, they have some. They've done some of the Neil Adams in the Illustrated by Neil Adams Batman volumes. They did Robin Meets Man-Bat and the Joker one, the Stacked Cards or whatever it is.
Stacked Cards.
They've reprinted those two. So I'd love to see all of these get a nice, you know, reprint in a trade paperback. So yeah. Come on, DC, do it.
Yeah, they've got like 4 or 5 Supermans lying around and then a couple more Batmans and stuff. So, yeah, that would be great. And said Jose Luis Garcia Lopez, great to be his name, does a tremendous job here. I mean, he crams 1,000 panels in a page. I mean, he really is. There's a ton of dialogue in these stories, and he manages to really still pull some great visuals out. And there's one page of where a full figure of Batman is straddling like 4 or 5 panels.
Yeah.
And it just looks beautiful. I mean, it looks like the Superpowers collection.
Yeah, it looks something straight out of the Style Guide. I mean, it's great. I mean, you don't get a Bronze Age Batman more iconic than this. I mean, this is it. Nothing against the people working in the Batman comics at the time, but, you know, Neil Adams had moved on from the monthly books, obviously, at that point. So this is looking better than any of the monthly Batman comics that were coming out probably around this time.
Yeah.
Pre-Marshall Rogers and Don Newton. So this is top-notch stuff.
Absolutely. So the second story is The Mystery of the Scarecrow Corpse, of course, where Batman sort of meets Sherlock Holmes.
Yes.
one of the things that occurred to me is you know, that these two stories are put together is that both of them feature Batman going on a foreign location, which is, of course, very, right. very unusual for him. And it sort of reminded me of those sitcoms that after, like, they've been on the air 3 or 4 years and they want to, like, spruce things up, they send, you know, the Brady Bunch to Hawaii or they send the Friends to France. It's like, you know what? Batman's been very successful for a long time. Let's send him to Gorilla City and let's send him to England. Let's get him out of Gotham City. It just feels like he's going to run into Vincent Price or something. You know, just that kind of...
I was about to say the same thing.
Yeah.
It's Egghead. Oh, no, never mind.
Yeah, it just has that feel to it. It's just, they're... And again, Jim Backus. Like, yeah. Hello, Batman. And it's like we talk about in the first story that he's, you know, a duly deputized member of the police force. Here in Mystery of Scarecrow Corpse, he's giving lectures on criminology.
And I suggest you all get a cape and cowl and a utility belt. It's standard issue back in the States.
I suggest all of you have tragic childhoods and have a grim vigil of justice. Yeah. I mean,
those of you with dead parents, you will succeed.
Yeah. I just love the idea of, like, signing up for Batman's lecture. You know, like, who wouldn't want to go to that? Hey, this crazy American is going to come over and he's going to stand there in a bat suit and teach us about... And then I love in that the fact that we get a little snippet of the lecture and Batman is extolling the virtues of microscopes.
Yeah.
I like to think the criminologists were pretty sold on microscopes by this point.
I think so. I mean, have you ever seen a crime lab in any TV show or movie where they didn't have at least one microscope?
I mean, you know, hey guys, guess what? We're going to start fighting infections with penicillin. Like, ooh, really? Like, you know, come on, Batman. He's very condescending to his British colleagues, I guess.
Yeah. I always thought it was kind of interesting, even as a kid, that the guy comes out and is like, you have a call, Batman. He's like, oh, I better take this. And the guy's like, well, you'll have to excuse Batman. He's just been called to... It's like he's going to tell him what they called him about. They're all, like, running out trying to get on the case. The moors are covered in cops trying to break the... It's like they're tripping over one another, you know.
So, you know, there's the whole bit about where he's in the bar, which is really funny, which...
Oh, gosh.
You know, is very reminiscent of, what's his name? His identity? His
Matches Malone.
Matches Malone. Matches Malone, of course, yeah.
And the dialects that they use, I mean, the accents. When I was a kid, I could not understand what that one guy said. He's like, I need that line for longer. I mean, that's all I got out of it. So until I saw this comic, I had no idea what the guy was saying. our buddy Andy Leyland just must be like smacking his forehead over
yeah.
some of the accents that they try to put together in this book. I mean in this record. It's, you know, even the guy that's playing darts, there's a couple lines with him that are so thick you can't wade through them, you know. But it is a nice scene, and it definitely does feel like the Matches Malone bit. I mean, he's even got a mustache in the comic, so,
right?
But yeah, it's a nice little bit with the darts and everything. But yeah, it's fun. But yeah, when I was a kid, I had no idea what they were saying.
Yeah. Art-wise, it's very moody in that where Batman is out there in the moors and he's in the fight scene and he's punching the guy. Like, it's, I guess this is more the colorist's work than anything else, but it's lit when these sort of orange and yellows. We'll post this on the Tumblr so you can see some of these pages. But it's a really, yeah. really very beautifully done. I mean, of course, it's JLGL, of course, so it's beautiful, but it fits the mood of this piece because this is a little, I don't know if you want to, would you say it's a darker, it's not a darker story exactly, it's just moodier, I guess.
I guess it really is in a way, because, I mean, you're dealing with, again, it's Power Records, so they put the word corpse in the title for a children's record.
Yeah, there you go.
They never show it, but they talk about how a police officer was murdered and
That's
his body
right.
was desecrated and strung up like a scarecrow. So, you know, Batman's pretty honked off about it. And, you know, JLGL, PBHN.
PBHN, yeah.
he can draw an angry Batman like no other. I mean, he just, his Batman just looks completely... just completely angry, and you really just get the feeling it's almost like a Jim Aparo fight scene where he just looks like he's just exploding someone's skull with a punch. You know? I mean, it really does, and he's even wiping his brow at the end, like he's really like he's like calming down after he just really worked the crud out of these guys. You know? I like it. One thing that always that I kind of found interesting with the comic. I always assumed that when Holmes lights his match and the foreign agents see the one guy says he saw the scarecrow, I had assumed Batman had set up a scarecrow, like grabbed a scarecrow from the field and had brought it with him to basically to, you know, make them afraid so he could ambush them, you know, to scare them.
Right.
And you don't get that. I guess they saw Batman because... the artwork just shows Batman jumping out at him.
That's
so,
right. Yeah, you're right.
In my head, having just heard the audio, I just always assumed that he had propped up a real scarecrow and to frighten him, but he didn't. So that was kind of interesting to see that. But this plot, in a way, is a little Scooby-Doo-ish, you know.
Oh, very much so. Yeah.
they create a local myth to scare people away as they look through the moors. It's kind of like I think there was one where they were looking for an armored car in a swamp with a witch and a zombie or something. That's what it made me think of.
Hey, Power Records had the rights to Scooby-Doo as well. They could have teamed these two up if they wanted to.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, Batman and Scooby-Doo, they know each other, so.
Yeah, they live in the same universe.
That's right. Yeah, it's... The bit with Holmes, I always, when Batman's like, when he meets him, he's like, oh, no relation to Sherlock Holmes. He's like, oh, I get quite a bit of ribbing about it. Well, don't wear a deerstalker hat and smoke a pipe.
Yeah, he really is playing into the whole cosplay angle of Sherlock Holmes by dressing the way he does.
It's not Benedict Cumberbatch. This is old school, you know, old school, Rathbone Holmes here, you know, Basil Rathbone Holmes.
Yeah.
Which, how great would it be if they'd made a movie of this in the 70s with Adam West and Peter Cushing?
Oh, jeez.
Greatest movie never made.
That really would have been amazing. That really would have been, like, yeah, a Hammer film.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Batman Hammer film.
Now I'm sad that they never did that.
You know, and you could have, you know, we'll throw Christopher Lee somewhere. He should have been Ra's al Ghul. You make him Ra's al Ghul.
Oh, my God. Oh, that would have been great. Oh, my God. My head's... Oh, Wow, Chris. Jeez. That is amazing.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I've watched Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee read a phone book. You throw Batman in it, it's like...
Yeah. Oh. We have to make sure Zoom Mukinori hears this episode so he can work up a poster or something.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Oh, man, that would have been so cool, yeah. Yeah, it's sort of funny that the whole thing here is that he's meeting Sherlock Holmes, and yet that whole idea is sort of tossed off in the last couple panels. I mean, it's just like, oh, wait a minute, there's no... And Batman's like, huh, okay, and then just leaves. Okay, well, all right, I accept that.
Yeah, ghost of Sherlock Holmes, that's been stuck in my head for 40 years, too. So, yeah. And when he met Sherlock Holmes in Batman, or Detective Comics, what was it, number 572, the 50th anniversary issue?
Right, right.
I was like, ah, he's met him before, you know?
Yeah.
No big deal, although that's that's a great comic.
It is. It is. The Mike Barr and Alan Davis. Great.
I love
combo.
That run.
So, that's good stuff.
That's good Batman stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Zen, I think that's pretty much about it, right, for these? I don't think we have anything else we really want to cover. All right. So now we're going to cover the listener feedback that we got for the previous episode, which was episode 8, which was our $6 Million Man Christmas episode. We actually got a message from Shag, my erstwhile co-host over at Fire and Water. He actually listened to an episode of Power Records Podcast, which was nice of him. He said, my love for the Bionic Man carried on. He talks about he never had the toys, the $6 Million Man toys. He said, my love for the Bionic Man carried on, and I even followed Lee Majors to the Fall Guy. Which is, that's such a funny idea. That's like a kid thing to do, that like when you really like an actor in a role... You keep watching them in other venues, even though, of course, they're not playing the role. And I will admit, I watched Adam West in a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Because it was Adam West, you know. Yeah. Even though, you know, I knew intrinsically he's not going to be Batman, it was still Adam West. So I followed him to like Fantasy Island and like what other cheesy TV shows he did. So I was good to know I was not the only one that did that.
Right, I did the same thing with Lee Majors. I watched The Fall Guy. I watched T.J. Hooker because Shatner was on it, you know. So, I mean, hey, you know.
Shag also mentions, he says, were these four individual releases or were they four stories on one album? They were all on one album. And then one of them out of the four, oddly enough, was issued as a single, The Elves Revolt.
Right.
Was put out as a single. The other three were not. So who can understand why Power Records does the things that it does
Yeah, again, like we said, these two Batman comics were never issued separately, but yet that $6 Million Man record was, so that's really strange, yeah. Shag also said that Lee Majors impersonation was really impressive. Seriously good. Oscar, not so much. So.
Yeah, they didn't bother with Oscar, clearly. But that guy was striking. That guy playing $6 Million Man, he was in there pitching.
Yeah, he was. I mean, there's several comments like that, and I know I brought that up. I was really impressed with that guy that he went that extra mile to give it that authentic feel. He probably fooled quite a few kids, you know, into thinking that Lee Majors actually recorded that.
So. Well, am I crazy that I hear like just a little bit of like George W. Bush in there?
Oh, no, you're not. No.
I feel like a little bit of strategery.
Oscar, what's the strategery we're going to do about these elves revolting up there at the North Pole?
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, see, there you go. I can picture Will Ferrell as George Bush, as Lee Majors, as Steve
Don't
Austin.
Give him any ideas. They'll make Will Ferrell the $6 Million Man.
Oh, that's so, true. Yeah. Maybe.
What are they already doing? Mark Wahlberg, right? He's a $6 million man.
Oh, God.
That's whatever they're doing.
Anyway, Shag also mentions he glad he used that particular stinger. I was thinking of that the entire episode. He's referring to, of course, the Lee Majors is open in Scrooged.
Right.
He plays himself in the night the reindeer died. Yeah, you can't help but think of that. You know, anytime you think of Lee Majors, you think of him in that opening couple minutes of Scrooged.
I think it's the last thing he did. No, I'm not...
He does a lot of, like, you know, real straight-to-DVD stuff, but he's still active. He's still active. Yeah,
not for him.
Yeah.
I never seen anything. I saw him on a commercial for hearing aid, and he actually referred to it as, like, a bionic hearing aid or something
That makes me sad.
It does. It's like, oh, man. You know?
Yeah. Anyway, we got a message from Kyle Benning, and he says, man, these stories were a blast to listen to. The Mission Control guy's voice reminds me of the voice that did the narration for G.I. Joe toy ads. Maybe it's just the space setting, but I can't help tie the voice I'm hearing into reading the narration of the G.I. Joe commercial for the Defiant Space Shuttle. That would have been a hell of a team up too, G.I. Joe and $6 Million Man, because they also had, Power Records also had G.I. Joe license as well.
Well, you know, and I'm pretty sure I didn't have him, but before Kenner managed to come out with the $6 Million Man figure, Hasbro put out, what was it, Mike Power, the Atomic Man? Or
that's
something
right. Like that? Yeah.
In the 12-inch Joe line. So they were they were kind of, he was kind of in there. But I know that I can hear the guy's voice in my head that he was talking about in the Real American Hero 3 3/4 size G.I. Joe's. The guy, you know, live the adventure of G.I. Joe. Mm-hmm. And he was the voice on the Marvel Comics commercials that they would air, because they'd air a commercial for the comic, and then they'd take that same animation and use it in the commercial for the toy.
That's right.
So it was, was this the toy commercial or the comic commercial? So it was, it sold a lot of comics, because whenever they did one that was particularly for the comic commercial, I'd make sure I picked up that issue. So it worked.
Mm-hmm.
Way to go, Marvel.
It was so amazing to see an ad for a comic book on television. You know, like,
yeah,
I mean, that's just so strange.
Exactly. And it's about the only one. DC's done a few here and there. I think they did one when the New 52 came out, but that's not very many. So it's kind of odd that they haven't done more. But yeah. So Kyle also said in his message there, he said, in the end, of course, Steve Austin saves Christmas. Where's that Rankin and Bass claymation film? Move over, Rudolph. I want some Bionic Man crushing weather terrorist claymation awesomeness. Now, that would have been something to see.
$6 Million Man versus the Heat Miser and the Cold Miser.
Yeah.
Super cool.
Okay, well, you know, they always had some celebrity hosting those things.
That's right. And Fred Astaire, Burl Ives. Yeah, get Lee Majors.
Andy Griffith. Yeah, somebody. Yeah. Jimmy Durante, so why not Lee Majors, right?
Yeah, cool. We'll start from Diablo Frank. He says, I watched a little dollar, called it Dollar Man / Bionic Woman in syndication as a kid, but I was more of a Fall Guy fan. But get with the Fall Guy. I believe I had a secondhand Bigfoot with some pieces missing that I bought at a flea market to join Naked Gene Simmons in battling my Indiana Jones doll. That's about the extent of my interest, so I clearly wasn't the target audience here.
That is a disturbing thought. Naked Gene Simmons and Bigfoot battling the Indiana Jones doll. Frank also said the Lee Majors impersonation was solid, so there's another one. Could have pumped up their gain on the actor, though, as Majors' mumble mucked with the levels. The delivery felt flat at times, but that may have just been an extension of the mimicking. I can understand the choice not to do impersonations on other records, such as Planet of the Apes, where reference may not have been as readily available, and they were adaptations of the films rather than the original stories. I hope the Star Trek stories make some attempt, as Kirk and Spock's vocal mannerisms are so essential to their performances. You know, it's been a while since I listened to any Star Trek Power records. I don't recall them being really bad, but did they do decent Shatner and Nimoy, or?
In my opinion, they really aren't. It's weird. We should just talk about this when we should just do a Star Trek episode of the show.
Yeah.
But it's like the guy is sort of doing a Shatner, but not really.
He's not doing Kevin Pollak doing Shatner.
No. Yeah. It's like it's like a guy trying to be William Shatner, but not mimicking. I'm just repeating myself. Well, anyway, we'll get to that in a future episode because we haven't done any Star Trek records yet. We got to get around to that. And then finally, we got an email from Geoff Haas, and he says, hey, Rob and Chris, just a note to say I've enjoyed catching up on the Power Records podcast. I've had so many of these records as a kid and practically wore them out. Anyway, keep it up, and I hope you'll keep your blog going for a while. I've enjoyed having it as a resource to collect everything I had or did know I, quote, needed. Yeah, there's always new things we're finding on the Power Records blog, powerrecord.blogspot.com. I always think I've found everything, and then I find something new. You know, so there's always some discoveries. It's tough because Power Record is such a generic term. It's hard to do like Google image searches because you just find lots of crap that you don't need. But, you know, every so often I still find something where I'm like, wow, this, they did this. I didn't know they did this. So it's a mystery that never quite, I don't know if I'll ever be able to say I found them all because there is no database to compare it to.
Right.
It's very similar to the Mego community where you just keep finding new things. You keep thinking,
right.
Oh, I found that. it's all been cataloged. And they're like, no, we found this new thing, so.
Yeah, here's Jet Jungle, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
He's a South African superhero with that came in a, you know, promoted oats. And yeah. I mean, that's, you know, or, you know, I know, like, you posted that, what was it, that superhero three-pack that was like Batman?
Yeah, Batman, Spider-Man, and Superman records all packaged together in one sleeve, yeah.
Yeah, that was from Rockwell J. Pugglesworth, right? He sent that along
Submitted by a reader, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean that was really something. I mean, I had no idea. That makes you think that was something that might have been like in a Sears catalog or mm-hmm. something like that. You know, I mean, I don't know that, but it just makes you think that might be something that you know, Monkey Ward's or Sears put in their catalogs and you know as a special promotion piece, which is really cool. And the artwork was neat on it. A lot of Neil Adams reuse, but. Yeah, you never know. I mean, it's hard to tell. You know, one of these days we might stumble upon some other character that we don't even know had a power record, you know? So
I didn't know that, you know, that there's that one Shazam record. I never knew they did a Shazam record until a couple of years ago, and it was never repurposed on any other record. It just exists as a 45, and that's it. It's like, wow, they did a Shazam record? Like, yeah, so the I got to write that book one day and figure all this out and head up to Newark and find the warehouse up in Newark and see if they're still there. Still some old dusty records laying around or something. So I think that's probably going to be it. It's going to do it for this episode of the Power of Records podcast. You can always find me at aquamintron.net. Of course, you can email the show at firewaterpodcast@conquest.net. And you can look at some pages from these two stories. We're going to post them on the Tumblr, which is fireandwaterpodcast@tumblr.com. And Chris, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me and my wife, Cindy, on the Supermates podcast. That is, you can find it at iTunes or at supermatescomic.blogspot.com.
Awesome. Great show. Everybody should be listening to it. So I guess that'll do it. Until next time, drop the needle and turn the page.
Come, Robin, into the Batmobile and home.
You won't be wanting to put any money on the game, would you, mate?